Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Capital Confidential Podcast. This is Brendan Lyons, a managing editor for the Times Union, and I'm joined today by Chris Bragg and Mandy Fries, who are Capital Bureau reporters. Today we're going to discuss a scathing Attorney General's report that was issued on nursing home deaths and the treatment of nursing home residents in New York during the pandemic. So, Mandy, the part of the report that caught many people's attention is that New York State appears to have sharply underreported the number of nursing home deaths associated with COVID-19. There were also other aspects, other improprieties and problems and safety issues uncovered, including mistreatment of nursing home patients. Tell us about some of that.
Yeah, so the report also found there was insufficient personal protective equipment for nursing home staff, as well as insufficient COVID-19 diagnostic testing for residents and staff early in the stages of the pandemic. Another one is the lack of nursing home compliance with executive orders requiring communication with family members, which I'm sure folks have seen in various reports that isolation is a huge concern with this coronavirus pandemic and the measures we've had to take to flatten the curve, as they say. Certainly that is an aspect that potentially could have impacted how residents were feeling on a regular basis. Another finding was specifically the current state reimbursement model gives a financial incentive to owners of for-profit nursing homes to transfer funds to related parties instead of investing in higher levels of staffing and equipment. Essentially, that means, and that suggests, that for-profit nursing homes, rather than investing in staffing and equipment, were looking to increase their bottom lines. And the report argues that potentially the way that the state reimburses nursing homes for the service is incentivizing them to not invest in staffing and equipment, but increase their bottom lines.
And that's really one area where the report fell short, if you will, because it would have been really interesting for the Attorney General to talk about the pipeline of personal protective equipment in the state of New York, especially during the early stages of the pandemic as it reached its peak. We've reported that New York State in its stockpiles had millions of N95 masks, gloves, gowns, all sitting in warehouses as nurses and other frontline healthcare workers, including people in nursing homes, were complaining that they didn't have enough PPE. And you wonder, why is that? Why did the state, just in the one warehouse in Guilderland alone, they had more than, I believe, 7 million N95 masks stockpiled when people were saying they couldn't get masks. And in some instances were reporting that they had to make their own masks. So that would have been nice to see a little deeper dive on that aspect of why these nursing homes didn't have the right equipment and whether that was the fault of nursing home operators, the state, or both.
A big takeaway, particularly from healthcare providers and the long-term care providers from this report, was there was a lack of priority when it comes to long-term care. Essentially, they feel like they were an afterthought. The focus early on in the pandemic was concern over hospital capacity. So everything kind of focused on hospitals and long-term care facilities kind of were an afterthought, at least according to operators. So I think that also probably played a bit of a role where maybe going forward, there's going to need to be a better recognition of the importance and significance of long-term care, as well as supporting it and prioritizing it going forward.
Indeed. As the governor said repeatedly, like fire through dry grass is how COVID-19 would go through nursing homes. But now the question is, did the state fail to pull out its fire hose and stop that? So, Chris, the political implications of this report run deep. As we all know, Tish James and Cuomo had been aligned politically at one time and may still be that way. But this report, many people are viewing this as the Attorney General really planting her flag for the first time to say, I am going to be objective, and whether it's good or bad, I am going to expose wrongdoing in the administration. So what is the fallout, do you think, of this report?
during her first 2 years in office as attorney general, it seemed, just from what we could tell, like the office was very focused on the Trump administration, you know, filing dozens of lawsuits regarding some really high profile things like Trump's nonprofit. And she'd focused on things like the NRA. It had seemed like she had been pretty cooperative generally with Cuomo's office. And so I don't think that many Republicans in New York woke up this morning and thought they'd be putting out statements praising Tish James for her independent report today. So I think it's a very surprising to people in the political world. I mean, if you go back to the 2018 campaign after Eric Schneiderman had to resign, Cuomo, you know, endorsed her and they were helpful to each other. Cuomo helped fundraise for Tish. And she went so far as to, you know, if you recall, to forego the Working Families Party endorsement, which is a longtime ally of hers. Basically, she did that at the request of Democrats, including Cuomo. So we've lamented a lot and written a lot about the fact that there hasn't been a ton of enforcement from state level actors like Jacob and the Inspector General's office concerning actions in the legislature by the executive branch. And so it's, you know, this is an unexpected Albany development for a lot of people that she came out and did this, and we'll have to see what happens from here.
Sure. And it's worth noting as well that there could be something, another dynamic at play here. And that is that this investigation was done by the Medicaid Fraud Control Unit within the Attorney General's office. These are units, there's 50 of them across the country at each state. They are overseen by the Office of Inspector General for the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. They are largely firewalled, and supposed to be, because of the grants they receive from outside political influence, including within their own office. So It is possible, too, that the tenor of this report, the findings, were not watered down, because this is a unit that is largely left untouched in terms of outside political influence. Certainly, it's her office, her signature on there. So it's going to have created a lot of tension, I think, between the second floor and the Attorney General's office, at least for the short term.
I mean, when you think about it, also Trump's out of office now, and Joe Biden, the Democrat, is the president. So, you know, what does this office do now? You know, I don't know if that has anything to do with the timing of this, but.
And as you know, a lot of times reports like this, they'll sit on them, let them stew for a very long time. This is coming out in January, roughly 2 months after their investigation, or at least the gathering of their data close. So a very quick turnaround on this report.
Okay, we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
If you're enjoying Capital Confidential, be sure to check out its sister podcast, The Eagle. I'm Jessica Marshall. Join me each week as we take a look inside the newsroom at the Times Union, the Capital Region's oldest and largest newspaper. We'll discuss the week's top stories, and we'll talk to the award-winning reporters who write them. Listen at timesunion.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Capital Confidential podcast.
Another part of this report that stands out to is, or what's not in it, is what this may mean for neglect in the nursing home facilities themselves. Because as you know, Governor Cuomo had issued an executive order that largely absolved long-term care facilities of negligence claims. And the one thing, interestingly though, that he left out of that executive order was any negligence due to staffing. And so there could be some exposure here for nursing homes that didn't have proper staffing. That has been an issue before the pandemic as well, of course. Another aspect of this too is the PPE. You know, this was not a shock to people that our newsroom had many people who had covered nursing homes and the care or misconduct that was going on inside these nursing facilities. And there were people with loved ones in nursing homes telling us stories of being on, you know, they had to visit their relatives only on FaceTime and through online portals, but they could see nursing home staff in the background of their loved ones' rooms, not wearing masks. They could see other residents in the backdrop of some of those Facebook encounters, not wearing masks. And there were also in these units, there were people who were COVID positive on those wings where people were not wearing masks. And certainly that may have exacerbated some of the spread in these facilities. And Mandy, what do you think in terms of legislative fallout from this? The legislature was already agitated with the governor, with his administration for failing to turn over records. And they had recently threatened to take some action to get records. I don't know if they're still going to pursue that given this report, but what do you think could happen there?
Yeah, so it's certainly interesting. Speaking with some lawmakers who have been calling for the Investigations Committee, Senator James Skoufis chairs that committee for the Senate, calling on him to use the subpoena power to compel the health commissioner to provide the answers to some of these questions and provide the data that backs up the claim and the report that was commissioned by the state in the summer of last year that essentially absolved the state of any wrongdoing or any responsibility for the deaths at nursing homes. So it sounds like while this report has helped shed some light on the issue, a lot of legislators still believe that the state isn't going to turn that information over. And one of the criticisms of this report is that it's only a snapshot. It doesn't include every single data point. And so many are calling for an independent investigation still, while others are really pushing to use that subpoena power. And we're going to have to wait and see, because Senator Skoufis has mentioned that he is more than happy to use that power. He's used it in the past, but it looks like he wants to at least give state officials and the health commissioner the opportunity to respond appropriately and adequately during the budget hearing that was postponed for later in February.
Chris?
I would just add to that the AG's report today looked at only data from about 10% of the nursing homes in New York. So it extrapolates that there was an undercount of 50% based on 10% of the data. So, I mean, we don't really have the true number of deaths from this report. And it also doesn't make it any real definitive conclusion about whether the March 25th directive on readmission of positive patients was to blame or not for deaths. And in fact, talks about how that order from the Cuomo administration actually in itself obscured some of the data because it prohibited nursing homes from requiring COVID-19 tests as a criteria for admission. And so there's just less data about whether people were infected or not when they came in to nursing homes during that period.
And on the flip side, a lot of nursing homes were apparently, when they had a resident who was deathly ill with COVID-19, they would transfer that person to a hospital where they would ultimately pass away rather than passing away in the nursing home. And I believe that many of those deaths are the ones that have been undercounted. In other words, that person was sick and on their deathbed at the point they were transferred to a hospital, thereby skewing the numbers of nursing home deaths. So Chris, on the issue of the health department and Howard Zucker's health department, which is of course controlled by the Cuomo administration, they have been less than forthcoming with records to support their report last August that absolved them of any wrongdoing effectively in their policies and their executive orders, their amendments to public health law. And yet this report seems to lay bare a lot of questions about whether that report really was truthful. The veracity of that report is now called into question. It's been difficult to get records and data supporting that report, right?
I filed a Freedom of Information Law request on the day that the report came out last July 6th. And after 6 months, the Department of Health rejected the request for basically the surveys that were the underlying data for all the conclusions about how DOH wasn't responsible for these nursing home deaths. And DOH cited a couple of exemptions, but refused to explain why the exemptions applied to the records that we've been seeking. The Times Union, we, as you know, Brendan, we may have some action on that front in the works to try to get that data, but it seems pretty questionable for several different reasons that was denied.
I was going to say, certainly the fact that there's been denials to media outlets for this information has further fueled lawmakers' concern that they're not going to get the information without a subpoena.
They haven't answered that question that I posed to them, which is, did the Attorney General issue a subpoena to the Department of Health to get some of this data? We know that they have subpoenaed at least some nursing homes to compel them to turn over data. You wonder whether or not they had to do so. Tish James, the Attorney General, was part of a task force on this issue that would have given her access to some of that data. I doubt, though, that that unit, the Medicaid Fraud Unit, would have relied on that pass-through. My suspicion is that they may have subpoenaed the Department of Health, and it'll be interesting to know if they did, in fact, do that.
I haven't read every page of this report yet, but from what I read, it seemed like, at least on the aspect of nursing home deaths, that data came from 62 nursing homes that they requested information from. And then that was compared to the data that DOH had been reporting for those same nursing homes, is what my sense was. But there may be something in here that there was a subpoena of DOH. I haven't come across that yet, if there was.
So Mandy, at the time of this podcast, Howard Zucker has been tasked, the Commissioner of Health has been tasked with crafting a response to this report. And it's noticeable, isn't it, that we have heard nothing yet from the governor's office on this report. So what do you think this means in terms of Howard Zucker and his future with the New York State Health Department?
Well, certainly Cuomo could use him to fall on a sword if he wanted to sacrifice and absolve blame for himself. So there certainly is that aspect. And the fact that we have Republican lawmakers, minority leaders in the Senate specifically, Robert Ort has, called for Commissioner Zucker to resign simply because the lack of transparency, he says, is creating distrust. That's his argument for Zucker stepping down. Whether that will happen remains to be seen. I do anticipate that the commissioner is going to be providing a response to this report at some point today. It was indicated to me it's going to be lengthy, so that'll be a fun thing to read, I guess. And we'll certainly have to wait and see what Zucker has to say and whether he responds to that call among all of the other things that are found in the report.
Thank you for joining us for another edition of the Capital Confidential podcast. And thanks to our guests today, Chris Bragg and Mandy Fries, Capital Bureau reporters for the Albany Times Union.
For more on all things New York State government and politics, visit our Capital Confidential blog at timesunion.com. Capital Confidential is a production of the Times Union. Jessica Marshall is our producer, with support from the Times Union digital team and the Capital Bureau. Our music is Goodwill, courtesy of David Lombardo.
If you're enjoying this podcast, take advantage of all the Times Union has to offer and support our efforts to bring in you award-winning journalism by becoming a Times Union member today. Go to timesunion.com/subscribe.